character?
I mean, I don't know. I've never seen any of the movies.
Oh.
Yeah.
That is a surprise.
Hmm.
And I don't know why. Okay. Well, if you ever decide, you can watch the original three.
Okay.
Try to get the theatrical releases.
Okay.
Because the later editions, they've just added a bunch of weird CGI stuff, and you're like, why is this happening?
Yeah.
And then Force Awakens, I think, is great. And then that's it. And then you don't need any of the other films.
No, okay. Okay.
You can if you want. I just think the prequels are very muddy.
I watched The Mandalorian, but I didn't really watch it because I don't know a single plot point. I literally just had it on in the background. And whenever, like, Baby Yoda would pop up, I would watch and be like, oh my God, he's so cute. And, like, not listen to anything that anyone was saying and just watch him be adorable. And then I ended up watching the whole series that way.
Okay. I think that's why I thought you had watched Star Wars, because I knew you'd watch The Mandalorian, but...
Yeah. Well, watched is a very loose word in this
absorbed
scenario.
From the background. That's how I am with, because Chris and Emma watched The Great British Bake Off. And I enjoy it.
Oh.
But I've watched it through osmosis. Like,
yes.
They'll talk about something like, oh, yeah, I remember that episode. And they're like, you what? And I was like, I mean, I heard it. I was existing in and around the space. But then I'll tune in every now and then. And I'm like, oh, like, people are really stressed out. Oh, no.
Yeah.
And then I'll, like, cry. But they're, like, I'm not
supportive
emotionally
and adorable.
Yeah. That's really cute.
Boo. Yeah. I love that show.
It's great.
Yeah. Hi, everyone.
Hey,
I'm
everybody. And I'm Lex. And welcome this is to the peony.
Yay.
Woo.
Bow, 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 bow. We're looking for musicians, singers, songwriters, et cetera, et cetera, to compose an original theme song for us, because we've kind of narrowed the scope of the show and what we're talking about and who we're talking to, I think we need something a little more in line with what we're talking about and in line with the people that we have on the show, because our song, it's great. It's a great song. It is fairly generic, and it started out because we were such a broad podcast, but now that we're zeroing in, and we wanted to give first dibs to the people that listen, to the people that support us. Like, if you are a musician or you know a musician, like, we'd love to commission you to, like, create a theme song for us that would be uniquely ours. So if y'all know anyone, or if you yourself are interested, call us, 707-892-0401. Is that the number? I think so.
Yes.
Leave a message on our hotline, or just DM us at the Peony Podcast on all the socials.
Yeah.
So I just had to get that out before we got started on our topic of the day.
That's dope. I love that you are so good at remembering the phone number. I look at it every single week when I post these episodes, and every week I'm like, I'll remember it, and then it just falls out of my ears at some point during the week.
I have a freakish memory. Like, I have a freakishly good memory when I commit to remembering things. Like, I was working on a project for my film class where I had to memorize a whole, like, a minute long monologue.
Yeah.
And I did it. I, like, learned it within an hour.
Hell yeah. So you're gonna start acting is what you're telling
me. No. I didn't say I delivered it with any, like, conviction, or I just memorized it. And it was very, let me tell you, I was sweating bullets, because, like, being in front of the camera is sometimes very stressful for me. Like, I'm a shy little person at heart, and sometimes it's hard to show up and, like, you know, read a monologue, especially since I was doing this, like, very eerie, dark read of a lighthearted comedy monologue. I was doing the monologue from Zombieland where Woody Harrelson, like, goes on and on about the last box of Twinkies. But it was, like, very, like, ominous and dark and, like dramatic. But I'm never, like, I don't want anyone to ever see it again. I want it, like, wiped from the internet, wiped off the Google Drive. Like, I would much rather, like, work on the equipment and, like, other things than be in front of the camera. Like, honestly, actors, I feel like acting is one of those professions that everyone is such a critic where they're just like, oh my God, like that person didn't do it this way or I could do it better. And it's like, okay, mm-hmm. well then do it. It's super mm-hmm. scary. It's super scary to like actually be an actor or like act or like, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I think that actors deserve more credit.
Thank you.
It's the point of the story.
We deserve some credit. Not a whole lot. I will say there are a lot of actors that are, let's just say the hate that we get sometimes is well-deserved. That's all I'll say.
Ooh. I'm sorry. Do you have tea like, that you're not spilling right now?
No. I'm trying to think. I was like, do I? No, I think yeah. just like.
You don't have to use real names. You can make up
it's
names. Not.
It's, there's so many instances is the thing. Like, there oh. are a lot of very talented actors that I went to school with who are just kind of either above it all and or very clueless and, like, mm-hmm. don't know which end of a paintbrush to hold. You know, like, and you're just kind of like, wow, okay, I can't tell if you were, like, deliberately doing this or if you, like, genuinely don't know and, okay. Or there can just be a lot of, like, attitude or, like, I'm above this
because
I'm an actor. Yeah, and I'm like, motherfucker, like, okay. Life will humble you in some way, and I can't wait. Yeah. So
well, life humbles us all. That's what we're talking yeah. about on this episode.
Yeah. Booyah. We segued. Nice. Yeah. On this episode, we are talking about our creative failures. What are you giggling about? Oh, no.
I'm giggling. About because I think it's so cute uh-huh. when like we have a successful segue because it doesn't happen that often that like when we have a successful segue that you like take a moment to like really celebrate it and be like we did it and I just think it's so cute and funny so and it like weird. Totally knocks me off totally like unguards me like knocks me off. Like,
it's because I can't tell you how many times in my like regular life I will start talking about something and I'm like, I don't remember how I got here. Mm-hmm. I don't really remember where I'm going or how this story contributes to the overall conversation. Oh no. And then I panic and then I finish the story and people are like, okay. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go. like, there was a point to this when I started and I lost yeah. it along the way.
Yeah.
So, and I feel that way about segues too. So,
do you think your mind and your mouth are like at different speeds?
Oh, 100%. My brain works okay. way too fast. Like, okay. way, way, way too fast. And so yeah. I will get lost in the train of thought.
Yeah.
Or I'll like, jump five thoughts ahead and my mouth
yes.
is like on the second or third word and I'm just like, oh no, I can't remember where I'm going. so yeah. yay. It's a fun time. Or it'll happen like in conversation, somebody will say something and I'm like, oh, I can like add to this. And then I will get yeah. so stuck on that thought that yeah. I'll like not hear the rest of the conversation. And I don't mean yeah. to like tune everybody out, but my brain is like this, it like latches on to that idea and I'm just like, oh no,
I have a question.
Stop it. Yeah.
In school, were you one of those people that on one of the days where you would have to go around the room and read that you would like count how many people were before you in the circle so that you would see like what section you got so you could start running the lines in your head? Okay, me
every
too.
Now and then, yeah, yes, yeah, I would do that, and then I was always I loved reading out loud, like it was such a
really
I loved it, yeah. So I like I was always like, ooh, do I get like a good paragraph? I only get two lines, like it.
That's that the actor in you.
Well, what's funny is as an actor, I like. Well, maybe as a kid, I would get like that. I think now as an actor, I actually really love playing. Parts where, especially in like a group scene, mm-hmm. where maybe I don't say a whole lot, but you just get to kind of exist and like listen. Because I've had a lot of people that are like, I love watching you say nothing because yeah. I can just like watch the scene through you and like your facial expressions. And I find that, I don't know, it's super fun to do, to pull focus.
You know what we need to do when we yes. get together again? we need to get you and maybe another three actors, improv people, you know, what mm-hmm. have you, and recreate Whose Line Is It Anyway? Like, play some of the games. Do you do this already? If not, we should. I would love to host.
Okay, amazing. You're our Drew Carey.
Or Aisha Tyler.
Yes.
Tyler.
Aisha Tyler, yes. So we haven't done it in a while, but in like early college, whenever we would have holiday parties, inevitably we would play Whose Line Is It Anyway? And like, we would have our poor friends who were like not into improv and not into theater, we would rope mm-hmm. them into. And I look back on that, I'm like, man, my friends and I were really those like obnoxious theater kids that are like, okay, guys, it's time for improv games. Yay. So I know a lot of people who would be into that, or at least they were when we were 22. So I don't know about now, but yeah, I will.
Great.
I'm into it. I fucking love improv games.
Okay. I love that.
Yeah.
I can't wait to host. That's always been a dream of mine, is to host Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Oh, that's a good dream. That is a really good dream.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's beautiful. Yeah, you're welcome.
Well, maybe I'll get there someday. I'll get over my like fear of being in front of the camera, she says, into the barrel of a camera.
I will say, like, there's a difference between being yourself and pretending to be someone else.
Yeah.
It's totally different. That's why when people are like, oh, I could do it, I'm like, do you enjoy public speaking at all? Like, because if you like public speaking and you're like, that's fine. Yeah. That is so different than being an actor. Because I know a lot of actors who hate public speaking. They're incredibly shy. Hmm. Like, don't look at me. Don't talk to me. Just let me do my thing. And then there are a lot of people who enjoy being like center of attention, but they hate, like, when they act, they get super nervous and they get really in their head, because it's two completely different things. And then sometimes you have a blend where, you know, people enjoy both or they hate both.
I'm great in public situations where I can put my walls up and like be in the driver's seat. And I feel like that's probably why acting scares me, because you have to like go to some very deep places sometimes. And I prefer to like, I just, that's not who I am. I'm a little more guarded and I'm working on it. But yeah, it's hard to like go deeper. And so I don't mind public speaking or like being the center of attention at a party, because I get to kind of control the narrative of how I come across. And like, basically all of like the male romance novel protagonists that are like, oh, everyone thinks he's so mysterious, but actually he's socially awkward, so he just doesn't say a lot. Like, that's who I relate to. And so it's like, that's where I thrive. And so that's why acting, the like few times I've tried it, I'm like, this is horrifying. Like, I do not want, like, I'm working on myself in therapy and outside of therapy, and like trying to like unpack and explore those feelings for the first time in a very in ever, pretty much. And so it's just like, acting is almost like an intensive or like a fast tracked version of something like that. And that's very intimidating to me.
You were talking about control, and it's funny because like, I think a lot of people think as an actor, you have to be very controlled in order to do the thing. And at least for me, when I am in control as an actor, that's when it is the hardest. And that's when it is the least honest and the least grounded, because you're trying to, what's happening is your like actor brain is going,
overthinking.
I know how this scene is supposed to go. And I know in five lines, I need to cry. So I need to start thinking about how I'm going to cry now. And you get disconnected and it becomes really dishonest. And it becomes about you. Like, you get so in your head that you make it about yourself versus the story, the scene, and your scene partner. And that is like, so this episode is, we're talking about like our failures as creatives and the moments that have really humbled us. And for me, I was thinking about it, like, so much of the themes where I've been really humbled, it was where I was too in control and I refrained from, because you never want to, I'm, you never want to let go to a point where you could put somebody at risk, whether it's yourself or somebody else. But there is sort of this, like, you have to have a openness where you can be surprised, right? Mm-hmm. Like where you're listening so intently to the intonation and to what the other person is saying to you that you respond honestly and you can surprise yourself. Like you can, that somebody might say a line that in a way that they've never said it before. And when you go to respond, suddenly maybe that line makes more sense or it doesn't make sense. But now you have to like, oh shit, I have to use my line and the words that I was given to still communicate what's going on. And it's anyway, but if you're too in your head about it, and if you're like, I know how this scene is supposed to play out moment by moment, it gets really controlled and it can feel really stifling, especially as an audience member. And then you're like, oh, this was a nice scene, but it wasn't good. Yay. Creative stuff. So fun.
Yeah. I know. It's my goal. I haven't told you this. I'm telling you now on live air. But, you know, like, I'm much more comfortable, like, being behind the scenes. So, like, I love, you know, writing is my prime focus. But eventually I do want to direct. And I'm learning a lot of, like, the other technical jobs and getting the experience there. And I want to write a short film that we then actually produce. You would act in it. We would bring our people in because we know enough actors and people and like technical crew in the space to get, you know, an indie short going. And like that's the goal, is to like get it done, get it made, and like get it out there. And so I think it echoes a lot of what we've heard from other creatives that we've talked to about, like, just don't wait for the opportunity. Like, go out there and just make it on your own. Like create something on your own and, like, bring the people that you trust, that you love, that you want to see succeed in on it. Yeah. And so that's the goal, is I'm currently working on a short film that we can all band together. And anyway, I don't know why I decided to just tell you that on air.
I don't know, but I got butterflies in a good way. Right in my tum.
It's I am very like risk averse. I have been my whole life. I'm very failure averse. I grew up very much, you know, a child of trauma, a child of like aspiring perfectionist, you know, always striving to be that perfect person. And so oftentimes I wouldn't even try anything too risky or anything that I was passionate about because I was too scared to fail, because failure in my mind meant that I didn't hit it out of the park first time I picked it up. And so I like would battle with wanting to do things and then trying them out and then not being perfect and then feeling really ashamed. And then be like, okay, no, I'm not going to do this. And then leaving it, letting it sit, and then coming back, like continuously being drawn to it. And so I was thinking about that when we were talking about the topic of this episode, because I was like, I haven't really failed that much. But that's just because I haven't put myself out there to fail. I haven't really been living. I've been holding myself so in control of like my baseline emotion of like never getting too angry or too sad or too, but also not letting myself feel that like unbridled joy and happiness. I've just been kind of coasting in the middle and like walking that tightrope. And so, I mean, there have been like small failures, right, that everyone experiences of like you pick something up, you try it, you're not good at it right away. Or, you know, as a makeup artist, you know, showing up on set or, you know, especially runway, right? Like everyone is very ruthless in runway, like because it's a time constraint. So the amount of times that I've like done a makeup backstage and I thought it looked so perfect and I thought it looked like an exact replica of what the key artist had shown us, I would go to that artist, the key artist, which is the person that designs the look for the show. I would then go and before you send the model out, you have to get their approval. And like, I've had a few key artists be like, no, you totally fucked this up. Like, go fix it. Or like, no, no, this isn't like, and it's just like, it's not personal. It's just, mm-hmm. we have a time constraint. Like, you have to go fix this now. And so there have been like those moments where I like failed on a technicality or whatever. I had to go fix it. But I started really reflecting on like why I haven't had any of like the huge failures that a lot of people talk about as being like the ones that like make or break you. And so I started reflecting on like moments where those like risks or those passions were curtailed. And it led me to this moment of, and I don't know if you'll relate to this, I don't know if anyone will relate to this, but it led me to this moment of being a child and feeling so much joy about something and having an adult kind of shut it down and it like ruining everything for me. So the event in question, I've always been drawn to writing. It's like, it was the very first thing that I was like, this is all that I want to do. This is all I want to fill my time with. And you know, the people in my life, the adults in my life were a little bit discouraging of that as like a career path, which why we were having the conversation of what my career path would be at the age of 6, I don't know. Yeah. But I remember I was in like the 4th or 5th grade and I went to this charter school. It was a Montessori school, which means that like, we didn't really have a traditional structure. We didn't have like traditional schedules. We just, it was like very hippie, like sitting around crisscross applesauce in a circle, like sharing time, things like that. And I remember one day we were doing like a creative writing hour and everyone was writing stories. And then we got into a circle and they were asking people like, who wants to share? And I was so excited for the first time ever. I was very shy growing up. I didn't speak English when I first started school and I was like very much ostracized because of it. And so I learned to kind of withdraw and be quiet and like stay in the back. But I wrote this short story and I was like, this is so freaking good. Like, this is such a good story. And like, people need to know how good this story is. So I was like, I bit the bullet and I raised my hand and I was like, I want to share my story, like for the first time ever. And at that, just to give like context, at that point in my life, I was reading a lot of Nancy Drew. I was very into the mystery. I was very into the thriller, but I was also watching movies. I was exposed to movies that were not age appropriate, like a lot of Jean-Claude Van Damme, a lot of, you know, Godfather, Goodfellas, like basically like very macho violent movies. Mm-hmm. And so here I am in like the 4th or 5th grade and I write this short story about this like hardened detective. And I to this day remember what the first line is. I don't remember any other plot points or anything, but I remember because this is what happened. So I stand up. The teacher's excited. The teacher's just like, oh, wow, she never shares. She never raises her hand. And I'm holding my piece of paper and I'm so nervous. And then I'm just like, okay, just do it. And then I start reading. And the first line is, Charlie didn't know where the blood came from. He just knew that he was covered in it. And the teacher was immediately like, okay, no, sit down. You're not sharing anymore. Oh. And I didn't know that like, apparently that's not an appropriate like piece of work to share in like the 4th or 5th grade with like my fellow students. And no one ever explained it to me. And so I thought as a kid who like really put herself out on a limb, I thought, oh, like she immediately, like from the first line, she knows it's bad. Like she knows it's not a good story. Like I thought it was a good story. Oh, I thought it was like, I put all this like excitement into writing it. And I was like, and it was just, I got shot down. And I thought it's because I wasn't good enough and I wasn't a good enough writer. And from that point, like solidified, that was like such a core memory. And it solidified that like, oh, like maybe I don't have what it takes to be a writer. Like maybe my voice isn't something that, like maybe I have to come to terms with the fact that like my voice isn't something that is meant to be on a page. You know what I mean? So that was like a very pivotal moment for me to kind of like put, like I started writing less and less. Up to that point, I was writing every single day, like on every scrap of paper. I was like starting to write stories and then leaving them behind and then writing this other story and then coming back here. And I had like multiple stories that were on rotation that I always kept coming back to. And then after that moment, I was like, okay, well, like, I don't really want to write today. Maybe I'll come back to it tomorrow. And it just like, I just started this like very creatively depressive period in my life that has lasted me up until now, up until 33 years old, where now I'm like, writing is something that I continuously have come back to. And it's been something that's called me. And so now I'm getting back to writing every single day. And I like, I'm so afraid, but once I sit down and start writing and just something happens and I feel something that is like inexplainable. It's just, I feel like every single hardship I've ever gone through in my life never happened. And I'm just here and I'm just like really, I'm happy. And I feel like I have felt like unbridled happiness so I haven't allowed myself to feel it as frequently. I needed to be in control. I've needed to keep my guard up. And so when I have these moments, it's like, I can't explain it because it's so new to me, but I'm assuming it's joy because I just am so present and I feel so weightless. I don't know where I started or what the point of that story was, but I just like, formative experience.
When you said, like, I haven't had any experiences where it's like I've failed in some huge way that, like, like that traditional sense of failure, I was like, it hit a nerve because I'd been thinking about the same thing. I was like, oh my God, like, again, I have some of those failures in terms of moments that I really learned from, but nothing that was like career altering or life altering. So, that moment of like, or when you said, you know, I haven't failed in that way because I've been trying to like live up to this expectation of perfection. I was like, oh, right in the heart. I do think like as creatives, you're expected like, so what's your biggest failure? And I'm like, oh, well, when I quit my job and I like
lived in my car,
right? Like these really big dramatic things, right? Like I think that is sort of the stories that people expect to hear, and I was like, I don't have anything like that. I just have these small moments in a class or in a rehearsal or something. Like I don't, and I was like, oh God. So you sharing that story, like, first of all, teachers if you're listening, or parents if you're listening, like, please explain to kids like why something isn't appropriate or why like things are getting shut down, because it really does like that shit sticks in your bones for years. And I'm so thankful that you've found a way to back to that voice, because that's a lot of people don't. And then I think the bigger failure becomes like you're not living.
Yes.
The one life that you have the way that you want. So I don't know, I think for me, like, that has been, honestly, I was thinking about it, not to be morose, because there are reasons why I like went into a corporate world, but getting involved in a corporate setting and doing the traditional 9-to-5, I think has been one of the biggest failures. And also a blessing in that I've learned a lot and I'm a much more solid person than I was. And I think about like my friends in their early 20s getting into acting and the gross shit that they dealt with from the industry. Yes. And a lot of them aren't actors anymore. Like, the thick skin that working in a corporate world has given me, I'm sure will be very beneficial going into like the entertainment industry. But at the same time, like, I have friends who are doing television and films and professional theater and like have really grown into their career. And I'm, you know, 5 to 10 years behind them. And that is scary. And that I don't like to me, that has become a failure, but not in a like, oh my God, I failed and my mm-hmm. life will never get to where it needs to be. But just in a like, no, like the failure was a choice because I needed to survive. And
yeah,
that's just kind of what happened. But
and you've grown in a different way. Like you're saying thick skin. I see it as like emotional maturity. Like think of all of the not all, but like a lot of, you know, the Nickelodeon kids or the Disney yeah. kids that like, you know, kids in entertainment, if they don't have that grounding support system or, you know, maybe some other things that they may need, it's a really fucked up industry for adults. But then like when you enter it, I think even before the age of 25, right? Because 25 is the age on average where the brain is completely developed, like the prefrontal mm-hmm. cortex, which is your executive function center, is completely developed. So you're able to make decisions based on having all the information. Whereas before that, you're just very easily influenced and you're kind of functioning in your id. And so it's like, is it your id that's just like impulsive? Whichever one is like impulsive. Yeah. And so it's like, you're bringing a different level of maturity and you have the skills. It's just a matter and you have the network. So I think that's the thing is like so many of us will like go on like a wiki rabbit hole of like our favorite actors or our favorite directors or whatever. And it's like, okay, well, what did this person do? Well, what can I copy that this person did to get me to where they're and it's like everyone has their own journey. Like Idris Elba did live in his car before he made it big, but like Ken Jeong, and I'm not saying Idris and Ken are like, you know, they're they do very different genres very different. And everything, but like Ken was like a very successful doctor.
Yeah.
Was like, this is where my heart is. I'm going to like put myself out there and try this thing. And then like made the transition later in his life. So like everyone has their own path. And I think it's like very much curated. And I think I want to go back to something that you were saying, which is failures can sometimes be gifts. And I agree. I think there's like, there are two sides to it. And sometimes they're only evident, like the gift side of it is only really evident in retrospect, because it's hard, right? Like you undergo some sort of like heart-wrenching, emotional, like downslide of some kind, right? Like you really wanted that promotion and you didn't get it, or you really wanted that role and you didn't get it, whatever context people are listening to this in. And it sucks and it hurts. And for some of us, for myself, that's a signal to me like, okay, walls up, like regroup, like really double down on not feeling the badness and just like push forward. But sitting with it in retrospect, I'm able to say like that moment in the fourth or fifth grade when I was told to sit down and to stop reading my totally awesome, badass, like thriller story. That was like the failure that in the moment and for years thereafter, I carried with me and I like tried to push down and repress and be like, I don't want to feel those feelings. I don't want to feel that failure. But as I started thinking about this story in terms of preparing for this episode, I was like, but wait, that was the moment where up to that point I had been a loner. That was the moment where a bunch of kids who like hadn't really been close to me, like came up to me and they were the ones that watched WWE, which was WWF back then. And they like were into like the gratuitous violence and the showmanship and the drama. And they ended up being some of my closest friends for years. And they approached me and they were like, yo, I never knew you were so hardcore, Lubin. And it's like, we got that friendship because I put myself out there. So I didn't get the result that I wanted. And I was so narrow-minded of like, this is the outcome that I need. And when I didn't get it, it crumbled me for so long that I wasn't able to see until I started reflecting more on it. Like, there's this whole other part that putting myself out there about something I was passionate about, there's this whole other side that was a gift to me. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes you can only really experience that upon reflection and in retrospect. But I agree. I think every failure, embarrassing moment, whatever outcome that you wanted that didn't happen, it has a positive associated with it. And sometimes you just have to like really try to take the emotion out, or not take the emotion out, but just sit with the emotion, acknowledge it for what it is, but don't attach any kind of attachment or longing, or like, don't associate it as good or bad. Associate it as like, this happened, this is how I felt, those are the facts. How else can I look at the situation? And don't get me wrong, that takes work, because I'm doing that. I've just started doing that work this past year, and it's so painful. Like, great, but amazing. Unbridled joy and happiness, but also like pain.
Yeah.
Well, Charlie woke up covered in blood. He did not know where it came from. This is how I feel.
But he knew that he was covered in it. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
and it's like, you know, what you were saying too, of like, it gives you maybe like an emotional maturity, or it does, again, like, you know, what is it? Hindsight is 20/20, right? Like, you look back on it, and when you can see it in a bigger picture, you can also be really thankful for those failures, right? And, you know, they always say like, the only way to success is to fail, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think a lot of times we associate that ideal with like, you went after the boss's job and like, you fucked up, you know, like big things. And it can be, I think failures can be a lot more quiet, but it requires it requires some kind of self-compassion to look back on it and be like, oh, that was a failure, but I learned from it, and so I was able to move forward with it. And I don't think I don't think failure has to be this like big spectacle. It can be very personal moments, or maybe something that isn't that personal, right? Like having a teacher be like, no, stop. Yeah. But that's also, it's like, that's not a failure on your part. That's sort of a, I don't want to say like a failure on the teacher's part, but in a way it kind of was, like, for her to not be like, hey, Julia, like, let me tell you why I didn't want you to share your story. Not quite appropriate. Like, what are you watching at home? You know, like, there's, I just think failure requires compassion, whether it's to other people or within yourself. And, you know, when you're a kid, like, you don't have that. You don't know. You're just like, I'm a kid. Oof, I'm just trying to get through my day.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I grew up in a family, which I think is something that's echoed in a lot of, you know, immigrant families or first generation American children, which is, as you were saying, when you're a kid, you don't really have an internal monitor to be able to self-soothe and be like, oh, I failed, this sucks, like, let me work through it. So you do lean on your community. And oftentimes when you're a kid, that's your family. And I had very high expectations placed on me. And so my family was not a place where I can go and be like, I failed. And they would respond by saying like, okay, well, like, how do you feel? What happened? What do you want to do about it? Like, this is normal. But like, it was, you did fail. Mm-hmm. Like, why can't you do better? why did you fail? Like, it was, and that's just like a survival instinct. That's not something I fault my family for. I'm not about to say like they're horrible people, because they're not, but it's, you know, coming where they came from, which was the Soviet Union, which, you know, not to get political, but like what's going on in Ukraine right now, like that kind of overlording by Russia is what my family lived under for generations, and it's what I'm working to unpack right now. So when you grow up with a survivalist mentality like that, like, of course you're going to be highly competitive and you're going to have high expectations for your children, because you're going to, like, you're on a cellular, atomic, subconscious level, you're like, this is the way to survive. And obviously I want my offspring to survive, so this is what needs to happen. And so I have I hold no like blame or no grievances or no resentment towards that. But it did fuck me up as a kid completely, where like, I would be like, I failed, I'm bad at this, I suck. And to be met with like, you do. So what are you going to do to be better next time? You know what I mean? So now I'm like learning to self-soothe. And it's hard when you don't have that like community or that like space to be able to express that, because what it's led for me is to then associate my performance to my value. So yeah. Now I'm like, I'll try something and maybe I will fail at it. Oh, I'm worthless. I don't deserve to be here. I don't deserve to even be trying this. I need to just like live under the radar, like do a job, bring in money, have very like low response. Like, but that's not where my soul is. Like my soul is much more aspirational and much more, what's the word?
Ambitious?
Shit. Ambitious. Thank you. The brain fog is getting to me. But yeah, like I want more than that. But I've had to really work through and continue to work through this association of like, oh, it's like that TikTok. If anyone's heard like TikTok, I think it might be on Instagram. That sound where it's just like, repeat after me. Like one failure does not mean you're a bad person. And it's like, it's trash. I'm trash. Like that's, yeah. That's how I feel. And it's, and now I've had to remind myself like, no. Anytime you try something new, it's going to be uncomfortable because it's new. You're going to suck at it because it's new. Like that's literally what adaptation is pushing past that discomfort and not associating your worth to it and just being like, this is something I'm passionate about. So I'm just going to keep pushing through and figuring out. And like, hopefully I'll be able to laugh at myself when I fall short, but it's fucking hard. It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's hard. Cause it's like, it requires you to put yourself out there with the anticipation of rejection, especially as a creative, and not just like, sorry, you didn't get the role, or sorry, we don't want to move forward with your script. But then you put it out there. Let's say they go, yep, we want to greenlight this. This is great. Now you are maybe getting rejection from audience or critics or all of the above. Like requires you to keep putting yourself out there to have people comment on it and you know, interact with it, which can be really scary because it's like, do you want that? It, you know, and it, how do you keep yourself centered enough that you can hear the critique if it's valuable and not get bogged down by it? So it's, there's like so much to kind of weed through.
And depending on the industry, like with acting, I used to model, like those kind of front-facing industries, like it's very hard to not take it personally because oftentimes it's not personal, but it's about your person, right? Like, so the role or the brief or whatever is going to call for like, I don't know, like a 5'5" redhead with a size 7 shoe. And it's like, okay, well, that's just not who I am. So I'm not going to get the gig. And so it's just like, it's not personal because I'm not what they're looking for, but also like, why am I not what they're looking for? Like, why, you know what I mean? And so it's hard to disassociate that in certain industries.
Well, and like with acting, it's like, you know, or it's the same with modeling too. Like you were saying, like they have a very particular thing that they want in mind. And so if you don't fit that, and it can also work in that direction, especially with acting, like this is one of the reasons why I like love Chadwick Boseman so much is there's an interview where he said, he's like, I could have had a more profitable career earlier in my life, but it would have meant playing roles that are stereotypes. And that's not what I was interested in doing. Yes. I wanted to play roles that challenged the idea that people have of Black men. Right. And like Brianna, when we had her on the show, she talked about that. Like I'm reading the book that she suggested, One to Watch, where it's about a fat woman who is the romantic lead of a reality show, because that's not what people expect, right?
Yeah.
But people who exist outside of like whatever stereotype you have, they are allowed to have those experiences too. But it's hard not to take that personally. Like, this, I don't know if I would call this a failure. It was an embarrassment for sure.
We'll count it.
When I was in college, we had this casting director come in, and she was just a bitch anyway. Like, she should not have been allowed on college campuses. I was like, why is she allowed back? Like, everybody knew she was rude, and and not in a constructive way, in a way that just really tore you down. And she always, so in the class that I was in, there were three of us, three women who were in bigger bodies. And the only negative comments that she made the entire class were about the three of us. Like, and it was always tied to weight. But the thing that happened to me personally was that I was standing in front of the class and we were doing this exercise that is very helpful, but it was like, okay, based off of just her appearance, like, what kind of position do we see her in? Teacher, lawyer, nurse, doctor, like, those were kind of the jobs that I got. Like, you know, blue or white collar, but in, like, some kind of industry, right? And I was like, okay, cool, makes sense. Is she married or single? Is she this or that? And one of, I think it was when we were going through the careers, she was like, yeah, security guard, nurse, teacher. It's because of the weight. Like, that was immediately the thing she said. And it just like struck me down, where it was like, so if I lost weight, then I would be something else. Like, what? And that was a moment that in a way was humbling, not humbling, but it was embarrassing, first of all, and like made me feel incredibly small. But it was a moment where I like very clearly was like, there are going to be people in this field that are going to make those assumptions about you right off the bat. And some of them are going to be in casting, and some of them are the ones who have the power to determine what roles you do or don't get. And so knowing that now, I'm like, okay, if I see a pattern of like, I'm only getting cast in these roles, or even before the pattern starts, like, for me, that was a signal, looking back at it now, of if there are certain roles that I want to play or things I want to go after, I'm going to have to do it myself. Like, I'm going to have to create that role or produce that show or do that production on my own, because people like her are going to keep putting me in boxes unless I challenge it. And that is, I think, such a frustrating thing to come to terms with. I hope it's getting better, but it is, it's one of those things that just makes you feel so small as an artist, when it's like, I'm so much more than that. And I'm not saying like, I would love to play a doctor, a lawyer, a nurse, like, sure, whatever, like, give me money, great. But to then go like, that's all you're ever capable of, and you will never get to play a lead romantic, like a romantic lead, or to play,
I'm pretty sure Melissa McCarthy and Octavia Spencer did an action comedy together, like, where they were like action heroes.
So, you know, it that's the thing. It's like, it, you can be so much more than that, but
It's always fascinating to me how people throughout all the different levels of an industry, particularly the entertainment industry, but it happens across all industries, even the ones that, you know, maybe don't have as much exposure to the limelight, of like how entrenched certain like judgments are and certain biases, the phobias, the hatreds, like they're so deeply entrenched. And it's like, if this industry is big enough where if enough people were like, yeah, we're not doing that anymore, it would have to change. But it's so deeply entrenched that so many people are like, oh yeah, we're gonna, it's kind of like bystander syndrome, right? Of like, so many people are like, oh, well, there are these select few people that are really like doing the call to action and going to change the industry. Like, what would my voice do? Or like, whatever, I don't want to participate. Like, my voice doesn't count. Or maybe it's so, like, the bias is so deeply entrenched that they don't see anything wrong, like internalized misogyny. Like, I definitely am unpacking a lot of that. And I'm like, wow, I really grew up like blindly believing that I needed to like hate and compete against women for all these reasons. And it's just like so entrenched. But it's like, if enough people like said, oh, this isn't the way that it has to be, like the way that she said it to you, it was just like, yeah, it's because your weight, like that's just like the basis of the industry. Or like my agent back when I was modeling, that basically asked me, didn't even like ask me, she was just like, yeah, we're gonna need you to drop like 20 in the next 2 weeks to get this like opportunity, like I'm gonna send you on this, go see, so you know, 20 pounds in 2 weeks. And she just said it as if like it was like, like the norm, like as if she was saying like, okay, yeah, like there's coffee in the break room. Like, it was so baked into the philosophy of the industry. And to someone like me who was 17 at the time, I didn't even realize that it was impossible. She said it to me in such a frank way and such like a no, like, oh yeah, like I had oatmeal for breakfast. Like it was such a basic thing, the way that she said it, that my mind, I was like, oh, okay, well, obviously this is possible if she thinks it is. And it wasn't. And I tried. Yeah. Did it stop me from trying? No.
Yeah.
So like, and, you know, I've dealt with disordered eating and I have had some very dark years in the past. Yeah. And so that's just like, but that's what confounds me is like, if enough people were like, this isn't real, like this isn't it this isn't reflective of reality. If enough people said it, it would have to change. There are so many people for, I don't know what their motivations are. I'm sure everyone's different, but like they're not. And it's just become such a, like a, it's in corporate speak, that's the way we've always done it. Like that mentality, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, well, no, because where we are now is not where we were when we were doing it. So obviously let's adapt to the times. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think part of the reason why this is like one of the blessings and curses of social media, right? Well, no, this is a blessing of social media. I think part of the reason why, like with the entertainment industry in particular, that shift of, no, we're not going to do that shit anymore has taken so long is because it was one of those things where it was like, if you're like, well, I'm not going to take that role if you want me to drop 20 pounds or whatever, people would be like, okay, we'll find someone else. Like you're replaceable, you're expendable. And there still very much is that, like, especially with actors, like so many, you know, in LA, like you spit out of your window and you're going to hit an actor. Like they're everywhere.
Yeah.
The difference now is like we're hearing these stories come out about producers, directors, where it's like, no, this person is a piece of shit to work with. Like, don't give them a platform anymore or hold them to some level of accountability. So it's a lot more transparent. Also, we have, I think you just have more people who are in powers of leadership who want that landscape to change. They want to open it up more. And you have people like Melissa McCarthy who've really, you know, kind of knocked down some walls to, and shows like, and like A.D. Bryant with Shrill, right? Like, who've sort of opened up the space for other people to follow, which is, that's one of those things. It's like, okay, eternally grateful for, but it sucks that anybody had to do that in the first place.
Yeah. Well, I think we can probably like just go on and talk about this have this conversation and just relive all of our like
all of our cringy trauma.
Moments. Yeah, all of our trauma. But I kind of want to flip it to the listener. Y'all, if you I would really love for you to give us a call and leave us a voicemail on our hotline. You don't have to leave your name. You can keep it anonymous if you want, but I would love for us to kind of, for you to share, if you feel comfortable, what was a moment of failure that you had and what did you learn from it? Or what was something that you had to overcome, you know, in pursuing your craft or your passion? And like I said, it can be completely anonymous. We can even like make your voice like one of those, like,
yeah. You can also DM us and we'll read it too.
Yeah.
If you feel more comfortable with that.
Yeah, for sure. I just think like, these are very universal topics, and especially when you get into like creatives, whatever field they're in, like these humbling experiences, these embarrassing moments, these moments of judgment, these moments of failure, these moments of lack of support, they're so universal. And I would love for our listeners to share their moments, again, if you guys feel comfortable, to just, you know, I know it's your voice and my voice. We have a platform. We have microphones. We have a podcast, et cetera, et cetera. But I basically am just trying to tap into the community because I know that we're not the only ones going through this. I know we're not the only ones that have had moments like this. And I would love to just hear from our listeners about moments that they've had like this. And to the more voices that we have sharing these stories, essentially, the less alone I think a lot of us will feel, and the more that we'll realize that that fear that we feel stepping out onto the ledge of something we love is something that a lot of people fear. It's not a unique to you experience, right? The embarrassment of failure, the putting, like, associating your self-worth with your performance. A lot of the things we've talked about, I know that we're not the only ones going through this. And if you're listening, maybe you relate to this. There are so many other people. So I would just love for people to share their stories and get vulnerable with us. And just so people realize that, like, we need to pull back the curtain on perfectionism, because it's a fucking lie. It's the wizard. It's the Wizard of Oz. Yeah. Like, you pull back the curtain and it's perfectionism is an illusion. So if anyone feels comfortable sharing, that was like the worst call to action ever. But if anyone feels comfortable sharing their vulnerable stories or their moments of failure or lessons that they've learned, please, please, please leave us a voicemail, 707-892-0401, or like Lex said, DM us at the PNE podcast, and we'll share your stories.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. We really appreciate it. And
so cathartic, but also like terrifying.
Always so fun. Yeah. Thank you guys so much for listening and for all of your support over this past over a year now.
Like,
it's truly wild. I feel so grateful to be doing this, and we love you guys. So thanks.
So much love.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you next week. Call us, beep us if you want to reach us. Bye.
Bye.